Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Some of you know our national call-in show, Indivisible, that's airing Monday through Thursday nights for the first 100 days of the new administration. We have different hosts for different nights of the week. And with me now is our Wednesday night Indivisible host, Charlie Sykes, also an MSNBC contributor and known nationally for being kind of an anti-Trump conservative. He calls himself a contrarian conservative. He used to host Wisconsin's most influential call-in show. Charlie and I will be on together tomorrow night in the hour leading up to Donald Trump's address to a joint session of Congress. Hi, Charlie. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And for listeners who haven't gotten to know you yet, remind people how you became anti-Trump from a conservative perspective.
Well, that's kind of a long story. I mean, you know, I've never regarded Donald Trump as a conservative. It was interesting. He spoke at the CPAC conference over the weekend. I don't believe he used the word liberty or constitution on a single occasion. So, you know, while a lot of other conservatives apparently have decided to drink the Kool-Aid, I'm still holding off.
I was reading an article about you on Politico from last August that said you know Reince Priebus for a long time from Wisconsin politics, and he's a friend, but he decided to go all in with Trump despite having no illusions about Trump, you said at the time. What did you mean by Reince Priebus having no illusions?
Well, I mean, Reince Priebus, I think, you know, early on, again, saw what a lot of us saw with Donald Trump, that he was, you know, way outside the mainstream of what was then the Republican Party. That, you know, in terms of his character, his personality, his judgment, all of those things. And for a very, very long time, you know, I was able to stay in communications with Reince about what was going on in the campaign. And then at a certain point, like so many others, he decided that the tribal loyalty trumped any of those particular issues about whether we're talking about conservative principles or judgment about Donald Trump's fitness to be president. And look where we are today.
Look where we are. Did you see the polls over the weekend that seemed to be indicating that most Republicans are coming home? You know, it was just during the campaign that the media was talking about the Republican Party fracturing into two with a sort of Donald Trump nationalist wing and a more traditional wing. And now we have independents not rating Trump so highly, but 86% of Republicans saying, yeah, good job, man.
That's really extraordinary when you look at, we'll look at those numbers. And I actually think that Trump has a higher approval rating among Republicans than other Republican presidents. And frankly, Brian, that's an artifact of the increasing polarization of American politics, of the tribalization of American politics. Again, I mentioned CPAC before, you know, a conservative conference that really marked the complete capitulation of the conservative movement to Donald Trump. But we really are living in a world in which the, you know, left and right are retreating into their corners. And I think that the more criticism aimed at Trump, the more likely and the more intense the rallying around factor is. You know, conservatives right now are not necessarily sure what they're for, but they're definitely against liberals. They are definitely against the media. They're definitely against the left wing. And so to the extent that they see them criticizing Donald Trump, they go, okay, he's our guy. We're all in on this.
You mentioned right and left retreating to their corners, but Bannon sees this other paradigm that he wants to emerge. I've been asking all our guests this today. He says, no, it's not right versus left anymore. It's nationalist versus globalist. Do you think that has meaning to Americans around the country who you've been talking to for years?
Well, I don't know, because until this last year, we didn't really talk about what a globalist was, what a nationalist was. But there's obviously a vision that Steve Bannon is pushing, a different way of dividing Americans from one another. And what's really striking to me about it is that he's so overt about basically saying, yes, let's create new fissure lines, between Americans. Let's divide it up differently than perhaps it was before. But, we'll see how this plays out, because there are a lot of folks who never really thought about what it meant to be a nationalist. What does that mean for being a small government, fiscally conservative, pro-constitutional conservative? What do we have to become now? What do we have to believe that we would have rejected a year ago?
What does it mean to you? How do you understand it?
Well, what I understand is, this is a real existential crisis for the conservative movement. And if, in fact, the conservative movement is this populist nationalist movement, this national front movement, then, frankly, I'm out. And I do recognize you described me as an anti-Trump conservative before. I realize how small a group we are, because I think this is a radical departure from what I thought the movement was about and the direction that I thought that it was taking. And I think it's going to take the country in areas, in directions that are very, very hard to, really hard to envision, you know, what sort of economic divisions, racial divisions, ethnic divisions, you know, that we're now going to be encouraging and building our politics around.
Are you surprised after 5 weeks how nationalist Trump is turning out to be in office, not the non-ideological deal maker that he also sold himself as during the campaign?
Well, you know, we still haven't gotten the full flavor of the Trump era. You know, until tomorrow night, we're not really going to see what sort of a legislative agenda that he has. You know, part of this presidency has been, much of this presidency has been rhetoric and executive orders. Can he actually translate that into a governing philosophy? And even though we're 5 weeks into this, that's not clear to me yet. I guess I'm not surprised to the extent that I never imagined that Donald Trump was going to pivot and become something different than he was during the campaign. There were a lot of Republicans and conservatives who I think had talked themselves into believing, oh, don't worry about it. He'll become completely different when he is in the Oval Office. Well, the reality is the character's destiny. We had a long period of time to absorb and watch Donald Trump. It's very unlikely that a 70-year-old man with his personality and his self-regard was going to change. So I think that anyone who is actually surprised that Donald Trump has turned out to be what he said he was going to be were engaging in a certain level of self-delusion.
Charlie Sykes with us, our Wednesday night Indivisible host. And folks, if you're interested in following national politics in the first 100 days of the Trump presidency in particular, and you haven't discovered Indivisible yet, we're doing it Monday through Thursday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern, but it's a national call-in for the first 100 days, which is the first 14 weeks of the new presidency. We've done 5 of the weeks so far. Now we're in week 6, and it's Kai Wright Mondays, me Tuesdays, Charlie Sykes Wednesdays, and Kerry Miller on Thursday nights. Charlie, you did a great interview, I thought, last week with the chess master and Russian dissident Garry Kasparov, and I thought I would play for our morning listeners just a 30-second soundbite of how he compared Trump and Putin in this regard.
Look, now we could see it, how that's exactly as Putin. You know, Trump immediately attacked media, independent media. Okay, he didn't have the same opportunities as Putin to shut down, you know, the newspaper or radio stations or TV stations. And also, he attacked independent judiciary. That's, again, those are unmistakable signs of to be dictator. Again, I don't think Trump is going to succeed because American democracy is much more resilient, it has a strong foundation. But again, it's very important that Trump now, you know, demonstrates to American public that nothing is for granted.
Garry Kasparov with Charlie Sykes last Wednesday. How instructive was that for you to hear from someone who's actually seen this playbook before from within in another country?
So I thought it was incredibly powerful, to meet with somebody who has been arrested and beaten, for standing up for human rights, somebody as brilliant as Garry Kasparov. But you know, his real insight, and one of the reasons why I wanted him on the show is I actually think that you have to have gone through some of this before to fully understand that Americans have not seen what we're seeing right now. And he has a very interesting take on the whole issue of alternative facts, the post-truth political culture. And his point is that propaganda is no longer just simply designed to convince you to believe a false fact. That the real danger of propaganda, of lies, is to basically destroy your critical capability, to basically beat people down to the point where they shrug their shoulders and say, well, is truth knowable? What is truth? Let's just choose what truth that is most convenient for us, that serves our purpose. That lying is not to convince you of a false fact. It is really an assault on truth itself. And that's the kind of thing you sit back and you go, you know, I'm watching this. I'm watching the alternative reality, you know, media that have been arising. But also, that's not the problem. The problem is the gullibility of voters, and maybe their lack of interest in cutting through and finding out, you know, what is truth, and resentment about being lied to. And that's the real insight that a dissident like Garry Kasparov brings.
On Friday, after our show, so we didn't talk about it here on Friday, Sean Spicer held that short press briefing known as a gaggle, which is not a full televised briefing, but a gathering of reporters to answer some, to ask him some questions. But he excluded selected news organizations from the gaggle, apparently punishing ones whose stories he didn't like, the New York Times, the LA Times, CNN, Politico, and the BBC. And they could get the information from other news organizations, but not ask questions themselves. I wonder if you think something like that has any effect other than symbolic?
Well, it was symbolic, and it was petty, and it was to send a message that he, in fact, does intend to use the power of the White House to retaliate against media. On the other hand, and this is where we all have to take a deep breath, outside of our circles, this, you know, most people in Wisconsin, in Ohio, and Michigan, and Arkansas do not care about this. They don't know what a gaggle is. This is very inside baseball. And so the White House understands that they can do this. They can harass, they can intimidate, they can retaliate against the media without paying much of a political price nationally, and certainly not losing any of their base, because this is the ultimate red meat for the conservative base. And Donald Trump understands this. This is one of the reasons why that approval rating that you mentioned before is as high as it is, 86% of Republicans. If you ask Republicans these days, who do you side with, Donald Trump or the news media? It's no contest. So one of the things that Donald Trump is illustrating, and obviously understands very, very well, and many other leaders throughout history have understood, is that you need an enemy. And that even if you're not accomplishing anything, as long as you have an enemy that you can focus your supporters on, they're likely to rally around you.
Last thing, what are you expecting from the speech tomorrow night? I mean, to my own mind, I can't think of any State of the Union or State of the Union-like address, which this is, that was any less consequential, because his words don't mean anything. He says one thing at one time and then changes policy because he overreached in his speech, or because he was talking to a certain audience, you know, or because it suits him for whatever purposes. Somebody who comes out with things so cavalierly in terms of words, what does tomorrow night mean, do you think?
Well, I'm glad you actually said that, because I've, you know, for a long time always thought that everybody, you know, overestimates the importance of any speech. I've never seen, covering politics for 40 years now, a speech fundamentally transform the trajectory of any, you know, political career or campaign. On the other hand, I mean, it's just to be honest about it, I mean, kind of the freak show aspect of it, because there's going to be Donald Trump there in the place of, you know, in front of Congress. It will be interesting to see how the Democrats react. It will be interesting to see how enthusiastic the Republicans are, how he's able to begin to talk about specific legislation. We're getting some details about the budget that are coming in, that whether the math adds up. But you're right. Here's a president who has drained so much meaning out of his rhetoric. How often do we have to be led to the water's edge and say, okay, but we need to pay attention to the rhetoric. But then again, you and I will be able to talk about this tomorrow night.
We did. We will. I'll talk to you then tomorrow night at 8, as we do together NPR's pre-speech coverage at 8 o'clock here on WNYC. And listen to Charlie on Wednesday nights for the Wednesday night version of Indivisible. Charlie, thanks a lot.
Hey, my pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.